This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this. Yeah, the name of the dance is the Peppermint Twist. Would you like it like this? The Peppermint Twist.
Yeah, a little peppermint twist, that'll get you going. Get out off of your chairs, unless you're driving. If you're driving, don't get out of your seat. Hey, good morning. That was Joey D and the Starlighters, by the way. Ed comes up with some of the best songs. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with Ed Davis, Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us. It is Friday, May the 19th. As we move along during the month here, and we got a lot going on today, in a few minutes, Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation is going to be with us. We're going to talk about the chances that work requirements for welfare recipients will be part of that debt ceiling package. You know, they're going back and forth right now. Remember, Biden said he wasn't going to negotiate. Just raise the debt ceiling. We're not going to talk about any cuts and no stinking cuts and spending. Well, now he's singing a little different tune. Anyway, we're going to talk about that with Robert Rector. And here in Florida, Walt Disney scraps a plan for a new effort that would have added about 2,000 jobs to the Sunshine State. We are going to take a look at it and see if it has anything to do with this battle with Governor Ron DeSantis. And, Ed, you'll be interested in this. Almost 500,000 people have left New York City since the beginning of the pandemic. Almost 500,000. That is unbelievable. We are going to examine what happened. And in our ultimate top 10, the top 10 funniest movies ever made, according to Rolling Stone. We'll see how many Ed has seen. That'll be towards the end of the show. All right, so were you watching any of that whistleblower testimony yesterday? There were three former FBI officials that went before this committee to testify, and it became a rather contentious hearing. They're talking about some of the things that the FBI is doing, and to hear them talk about it, and to hear what they've done to these three guys, the FBI, for coming forward to talk about some of the problems inside the FBI, it's really scary. I'm not kidding. I really felt bad for these three guys. It took a lot of guts. I don't know that people would want to blow the whistle on the FBI, or for that matter, anybody in government, for the way that they can be treated. Anyway, these three guys, there were two of them, were Garrett O'Boyle and Steve Friend, and there was a third guy that was in there too, but these two said they were the victims of retaliation for expressing concern over politicization and weaponization of the FBI. Now, they went before this House Subcommittee on Federal Government Weaponization. So, obviously, it's a Republican created subcommittee. Jim Jordan, the Republican, oversees it. And O'Boyle confirmed the top officials in the FBI designated white supremacy as the top terror threat in the U.S. Can you believe that white supremacy is the top terror threat in the U.S.? I bet you I can come up with about 10 other things that are bigger terror threats.
Didn't Biden say that overseas, too?
Yeah. You're talking about a handful of Goombas.
Yes.
A handful that you can fit all of them in a large closet, all right? That's how many white supremacists there are roaming our country.
There's more radical Antifa and Black Lives Matter people
than
there are.
There's more radical Antifa in one large city, by a long shot, than there is the total number of white supremacists in this country. So let's
stop looking. And if the FBI is really designating white supremacy as the top terror threat, we got a real problem. Now, as I said, this guy O'Boyle confirmed that that's the top terror threat of the FBI right now. He had moved from Great Plains to Washington, D.C. at the behest of the FBI, and then he became a whistleblower. They immediately suspended him on his first day in the movement. So they must have moved him with the intention of then, when they put him in the new place, suspending him, because they suspended him on his first day when he arrived.
Hmm.
That sounds rather Machiavellian. O'Brien said he was unable to procure his family's belongings from the FBI following the move, and he had to rely on charity to clothe and provide for them. Could you imagine somebody doing that, an employer having such control over you that they would do that to you? That's unbelievable. He said, we're just trying to do the right thing for this nation. He said, and if that means becoming homeless at the hands of the FBI, then we're willing to do that. We're willing to sacrifice that. I mean, the Democrats on that committee immediately launched into calling these three guys, non-whistleblowers. They just have an agenda. And January 6th, debunkers. The black woman that was the whatever you call the minority person that oversees, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The second to the chairman is somebody from the other party. Anyway, this is what she was saying about it. It was really kind of hard to watch, and I don't know that the other... Fox was showing it. I didn't try to switch over to see if CNN or MSNBC, but I bet you they were not showing
it. I doubt it.
I doubt that they were showing that. Okay. Now, Walt Disney. What is going on between Ron DeSantis and good old Walt Disney? The tit-for-tat between Ron and Disney World escalated further yesterday when Disney World abandoned a plan for a new Florida campus in Orlando. It would have brought about 2,000 jobs to the state. That allegedly would have brought 2,000 jobs. The chairman of Disney Parks, Experiences, and Products apparently put out a letter to his employees that said the company's no longer moving forward with its office development in Lake Nona, wherever that is. I guess that's in Orlando somewhere. And he cited new leadership and changing business conditions for the reason. According to the New York Times, which first reported the story, the project would have meant nearly $1 billion to the state. So I guess that was going back and forth. Now,
you know, I don't think this is between DeSantis and Disney. I think it's between DeSantis and the CEO that thinks he's the world. You know, that he's a world leader of some sort. You know, if I was a shareholder, and I wish I was, but I would be concerned with where this guy is taking this company. What happened to pleasing people and being in the entertainment?
It does seem like they're forgetting the reason for their existence.
Now all of a sudden we're blackmailing?
Well, first of all, I am old enough to remember Walt Disney. My dad actually, if I can drop some whatever you want to call it, name dropping, my dad got a tour of Disneyland before Walt Disney World, Disneyland in Anaheim, California, from Walt Disney himself. They actually drove around a little golf cart.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a TV radio columnist at the time for the Chicago Sun-Times. And anyway, Walt Disney was the nicest guy to my father. And he had the whole concept of children in mind when he created the park.
Yeah.
He died just before the opening of Walt Disney World. They were creating the Orlando theme park at the time. But can you imagine Walt Disney himself being involved in a woke...
No.
If you know anything about Walt Disney, that would be the last thing he would ever do.
I can remember
he wanted to treat children and educate children and keep the innocence of children alive.
I remember going to Disney as a child. I remember the e-tickets. You remember those?
I've heard. I do. Okay. I remember. Yeah.
And I remember being entertained as a child. And now as an adult, these last few years or so, it's not about entertaining children anymore. How can you entertain a child for $150 a day?
I know.
Good God.
Yeah. No, it's completely lost its focus, in my opinion. Hey, we got to take our break because we've got to bring on our friend Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation, which we will do after the break. We're going to talk about the chance that work requirements for welfare recipients will be part of the debt ceiling agreement.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Friday, May the 19th, and thank you so very much for being with us. Well, nearly every House Democrat has endorsed an effort to make an end run around House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's effort to bring a clean debt ceiling increase forward for a vote that does not include spending cuts for the federal government. Now, at the direction of House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrats began collecting signatures for a discharge petition on Wednesday morning. A discharge petition can force a vote on legislation even if the majority party objects. But a majority of House lawmakers need to sign it. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but we're delighted to have Robert Rector with us. He is a senior research fellow at the Center for Health and Welfare Policy of the Heritage Foundation. And we're going to talk a little bit about the debt ceiling and the fight going back and forth here, and also the possibility that work requirements for welfare recipients will be part of the package. Robert, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thank you.
So we got a couple of things to talk about, Robert. First of all, do you think the Democrats are going to get away with this end run to sidestep the debt ceiling legislation?
No, it's just their theater at the moment. I think they're going to have to do something because I believe the Republicans are going to hold firm until they get some kind of cuts.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, it seems like President Biden has changed his position a little bit. He wasn't going to talk at all about cuts. He didn't want to have any talk. All of a sudden, he's changed his tune a little bit, right?
Yeah, he wasn't, and he didn't want to talk about work requirements and welfare either. But he's changing his tune a little bit on that. That's such an ironic subject because Senator Biden in the 1990s voted for welfare reform, Republican welfare reform, that required single mothers with young children to engage in work activities and work. And he was very proud of that legislation and campaigned on it, actually. And now these proposals are very mild. You're just going to take people that are able-bodied and adults, and they don't have any kids, and you're going to ask them to maybe come down to the office once a week to look for a job, and he's adamantly opposed to that, allegedly, as is the Democratic Party. It just shows how very far to the left they've drifted in the last 25 years.
Yeah, and I think Kevin McCarthy's looking good. I mean, he's really come along. I think he's got the upper hand on this one. I think when people are looking at the debt and what's going on with it, I mean... go ahead. What your thought on that?
Yeah, I think so. And I think these provisions on work don't have a lot of teeth in them, but what he's really doing is reactivating this issue, which was the centerpiece of Republican policy back during the Gingrich period in the 1990s, was a massive social transformation, which... brought down the welfare caseloads or in the particular program that was affected by 80-90%, but it also obliterated teen pregnancy and teen non-marital teen births. It transformed U.S. families. It stopped the decline of families. Very, very successful piece of legislation. But the Republicans have kind of walked away from this issue now for more than a decade. I think he's reviving it. And nine out of 10 Americans agree with the following poll question. Should an able-bodied adult who receives cash, food, housing, or medical care from the government be required to work or at least prepare for work as a condition of getting that aid? 9 out of 10 Americans say absolutely yes, including roughly 9 out of 10 self-identified Democrats. It's only the very extreme left, which Biden now represents, that is opposed to that and wants to give cash, food, housing, medical care to everybody without any requirement that they do anything in exchange for it. It's like a cornucopia of free handouts that they support. And they really want to enlarge that welfare state very greatly.
Yeah.
But I think the public does not agree with it at all.
I absolutely agree with what you're saying. And I'm surprised there's even a 10% group of people that think that people should just get a complete handout and not do a doggone thing about it. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And Biden really has changed his stripes. He's gone so far to the left. But I want to ask you, Robert, about the Senate. And Schumer, what are they doing? Are they involved in this discussion? It sounds like they're kind of sitting back a little bit.
I think they are not, because they really can't do anything about it. It really, the Republicans in the House, if they will hold firm, they can bring about some changes here, which will be the first time that we'll really begin to get some budgetary control. And I mean. And I think the public is with the mood of constraint now, and on this other issue of work requirements, once it's raised, the public is very, very strongly in support of this. Even in the context of this legislation, where people are looking at this in a very partisan way, it's Biden versus the Republicans, still two-thirds of the people are supporting the work requirements, even in this context.
Indeed. Can we put a dollar figure on if they were to include that in the debt ceiling package?
Well, they're very small. So it would save, I think, if they did them well, it would save maybe $100 billion over a decade. But here's the background to this. When we did welfare reform during the Clinton presidency, which was not done by Clinton, it was done by the Republican Congress, we changed the major program, which was called Aid to Families with Dependent Children. We said that a certain portion of those recipients, which were largely non-married single mothers, they had to work or prepare for work or take training or something. Caseload disintegrated, non-marital births plummeted, teen births dropped like a stone. Everything went positively, and over time we've saved $1 trillion from that. So that shows, in the long sense, if you reactivate this type of policy, you get very large social changes, which are the most thing that are very much to the benefit of the poor people themselves, but you also save money. And I regard these provisions in this bill as the first step. This is really the first step in at least 15 years that the Republicans have come forward on this issue And this issue originated with Ronald Reagan. It's amazing that they've let it lie dormant for so long.
Indeed. We're talking with Robert Rector. He is the Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Health and Welfare Policy of the Heritage Foundation. And we're talking about work requirements that might be part of the debt ceiling agreement. Is there any chance, Robert? I mean, they're still negotiating. Do you think there's any chance of a default, or do you think they're going to come to an agreement here?
I think they'll come to an agreement because I think that it would be pretty clear that it would be the White House that's pushing the default. I think that the position that you can't do anything about the deficit and that they're just going to continue not only to maintain these extraordinary levels of spending, but actually to aggressively increase them. I don't think that's popular, and I don't think that they can really hold that. I mean, just remember a year ago that not only were they opposing work requirements, but Biden came forward with almost a $2 trillion policy to undo welfare reform and go back into the mode of giving heavy cash payments to women that have children without being married and to remove the work requirements, essentially undoing everything that was done during the Clinton administration. They failed on that, but that's their agenda. It's an ever larger government, and it's a welfare system without any responsibility on the part of recipients. I believe that most Americans want to be compassionate to those who are in need. They want to give them assistance, but they don't believe in one-way handouts. They want to give assistance where it's needed, but require some constructive behavior in return for that. And that's the message that McCarthy's taking here.
Now tell me about the actual amount of money that we're talking about in this debt ceiling agreement. Is it really that we will cut spending, or is it just cut in the rate of increase?
It has to be a cut in the rate of increase.
So we're not really cutting. I mean, that in itself fools a lot of people.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm a creature of Washington, so cutting the rate of increase is a pretty good thing, and reframing the debate, I think, is a very good thing to really highlight how extravagant the spending that they're demanding here is, especially in the context of these extraordinary deficits.
Yes, indeed. There was talk that we would go back to what might be called pre-COVID spending amounts, but that's not really true, right?
I'm more of the guy that specializes in work. I think you're right. That's my perception too, but it's not my field of expertise.
No problem. So here we are, and it does look like they're going to come to an agreement. What is the process here? Let's say that I guess Biden is out running around doing something else right now, but he's going to come back, and supposedly they're going to get together again. They need to get this done, what, by the end of May, before this looming problem?
I think that's right. I think there's some leeway there, but I think that Biden will agree to do something, because I don't think he can just get away with trying to say, I'm going to spend whatever we want to spend. They have all this COVID money that's left over that they didn't spend. I mean, it's just ridiculous the amount of money that they want to spend here. And I think that they've done very well in setting up the House bill to put a number of popular things in there. Again, on this issue of work, even though it's fairly small what they're doing there, again, this is 90% of the American public are on their side. This was the issue, requiring welfare recipients to work or prepare for work to get aid. That was what put Clinton in the White House in 1992. That's the major thing that he ran on, and then he didn't do anything about it. And that enabled the Republicans to take the House of Representatives under Newt Gingrich. And the population really hasn't changed very much on this issue. It's a very, very popular issue. I'm very glad that they've stuck that in this bill, and it indicates to me that they'll be willing to do something more about it in the future with increasing strength.
Finally, do you think the public in general is more tuned in to this concept of the debt that we owe and the debt ceiling than normally? I mean, are we becoming, are we more interested or more educated in it, or is it the same old thing that 85% of the people wandering around don't even know what we're talking about?
Well, I think that that's, you know, it's always, there's a huge number of people like that, but I think that the more informed people have seen inflation, understand that this inflation is coming from these extraordinary debts, understand that the debts are really out of control, and understand that in a situation where you have out of control debts and out of control inflation, the White House is just wants to throw more gasoline on the fire by increasing spending over and over again. I think the public is beginning to catch on to that.
Yeah, I hope you're right about that. Robert, it's a pleasure to have talked with you. Thank you so much for your time. I look forward to talking with you again down the road.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation. All right. We're going to take our break, but when we come back, this is unbelievable. Almost 500,000 people have left New York City since the pandemic. What is going on? We're going to take a look.
You say it's time to stay behind. All I wanted was to hold you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is marine wildlife artist and conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back again. Freedom Works, thanks for being with us. So, Ed, you're from New York. Listen to this. Some of America's largest cities have seen a significant decrease in their population since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. And the Big Apple apparently tops the list. This is a report by the U.S. Census Bureau. It was released yesterday. It estimates more than 468,000 residents left New York City between April 2020 and July 2022. That's about a 5.3% decrease of their population. The largest loss came between 2020 and 2021, when the population declined by just over 281,000 people. Why would they be leaving, do you think, during a pandemic? I would think I'd be more, I don't know, I think I'd be more hunkered down.
You know,
were they blaming the city for the problem? Or are they worried about being so close to other people that they were going to catch the disease?
Well, in that time span, you had the pandemic and the way that was being handled up there, which was not very good. You had lockdowns. You had people that were frustrated, that couldn't work, and kids that were being held out of schools. Florida was opening schools. And then topping off the crime, I think it's just a trifecta of things that just eventually people said, you know, enough.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, you know, when they get a certain age there, that they, you know, they don't want to deal with the snow anymore, and they're on their way down here.
Right.
But I think more now than ever.
So it was like the straw breaking the camel's back
when COVID came along?
Yeah,
you know, COVID was probably the final.
I see.
And that's, you know, when you, you know, whenever you've got adversity or you've got crises, I mean, you see how your leaders handle things.
That was during the Cuomo debacle, too.
Speaking of Cuomo, he's flipped. Have you seen him lately?
The governor, former governor?
Former Governor Cuomo.
No.
He is bashing what's going on in New York and the Democrats and all that stuff. He's
bashing the mayor of New York,
yes,
current mayor of New York?
Yes. But anyway,
interesting.
I think with a whole... And New York, you know, New York is such a... I don't know. It's such an original place.
Because it's a wonderful place.
You could be upstate New York, and those people are going to be different than are right close to the city.
There's no question.
And then you got people that are out on Long Island.
That's where you're from.
Yeah, exactly. That are going to be different from the other two.
Yeah, you're very different. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I mean, you're right about that. And when we have, for instance, we have our buddy from Rochester, New York.
Yeah, and I think...
I don't think they'd like to be associated with New York City.
You could go right down in close to New York, around the city there, and you got real hardcore New Yorkers.
Yeah.
You know, you go out on Long Island, and they're just, you know, hey, how's it going? You know?
They're different.
Yeah, a little more laid back, I think.
Yeah.
I've talked to people that are out there, and things are getting bad out there.
Well, only three other U.S. cities saw a worse percentage of people leaving. San Francisco, they lost 7.5% of their residents. The Louisiana Lake Charles area lost 6.9%. And I don't know how this got in there, but Revere, Massachusetts, 5.9%.
Well, I think San Francisco, you can just bundle that with California, period. I mean, you've got actors that are coming out publicly and saying, you know, hey, we're out of here. And Lake Charles, poor Lake Charles. I mean, whenever there's a hurricane, it's like a magnet. It always seems to go through Lake Charles at some point.
Yeah.
And people just had enough.
I think it's sort of, and I think the same thing with the panhandle of Florida to some extent. It's a magnet.
But
that whole area up there is a magnet for hurricanes.
You got both coasts, north and south, and east and west of Florida, but Texas is another broad area. Mm-hmm. But, you know, right around New Orleans area and Lake
Charles.
New
Orleans is kind of the center area. Now, Los Angeles saw a population drop of about 76,000, with over 3.8%. Oh, what it says here. Okay, yeah. But, and then Chicago also lost a bunch of people. They lost, I don't know, quite a few. So, you know, lots of these big cities are losing people. Maybe it's a natural thing now that people are a little bit more transient.
And it takes time. You don't just wake up one morning and say, you know, let's get out of here. You know, you might have one thing go on and you say, well, we'll get through it. Then another thing happens. Well, we'll get through that. Another year happens, we'll get through that. And then the fourth year, you say, well, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
So it's not an overnight thing.
No. All right. Well, that number really astounded me. 500,000 people. I don't care where it is. That's a lot. And
but, you know, I just saw a documentary. I forget what it was. Something on YouTube, which is very informative. You ever watch YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
About
population, people migrating.
Different things.
Okay.
Actors that were moving out of California, and they want to make Texas the new Hollywood or the new California. They want Texas, of course, they want Texas to raise the, I don't know, they usually allot something like $8 million to filming films or whatever, how they do. They wanted to raise it to $800
million.
Mm. I'd move there too for $800 million.
Yeah.
You know? So, but a lot of actors are coming out, and you just had announced, Scott Baio is one of them. And
Texas has got a lot of things. It's got kind of, it's so large, and it's got, there's so many different environments in Texas.
But now, wait a minute, now you got all these people coming across the border into Texas. And they're not all being shipped out.
Oh, no.
They're not all being shipped out. Those are the ones they can catch.
Yes.
Okay?
True. All right. The Supreme Court... with all these other things going on, the Supreme Court has declined to address the legal liability shield that protects tech platforms from being held responsible for their users' posts. It leaves in place for now a broad liability shield, which allows these tech companies to have, you know, like Google and Facebook and Twitter, when people get on there and say these different things about different people, it kind of gives them, it continues to give them a little bit of a shield. So that they, and I kind of would agree with that. I think if you start being able to sue Twitter or Facebook or Google for something that somebody said about you, all of a sudden it's going to really start shutting down freedom of speech.
Well, I mean, and also you can't hold liable for somebody who says, I'll go out on Twitter and say, I'm going to go kill a bunch of people.
Right. Of course.
And then when it happens, unfortunately, you can't go back and sue Twitter. It comes back to the old adage, you know, you can't sue the gun manufacturer for the wacko that pulled the trigger.
That's right. So,
but they'll try.
That's true. YouTube, by the way, speaking of YouTube, they're also kind of included in this user speech freedom. It says the court's decisions in these cases about legal liability will serve as a big sigh of relief for these tech platforms for now. But many members of Congress are still itching to get their hands on regulations to reform all of that. That's the last thing you want is the federal. We want to keep this as open as possible. That is for sure. I want to also get to, remember the Keystone Pipeline?
Yeah.
And we keep hoping that, you know, maybe some way, somehow, it'll become functional. Well, as Biden prepares to tout his climate change goals with fellow G7 summit leaders, the head of America's largest energy company laid out Biden's renewable energy implications. This is TC Energy CEO Francois Poirier, and he said yesterday that you have to bring a little bit of reality to the conversation. He and his company had owned and operated the Keystone XL pipeline project before the Biden administration shut it down. And according to this guy, Poirier, they lost the ability to transport 800,000 barrels of crude per day, from Canada to the U.S. Gulf Coast. Now, it goes down there to be refined. Can you imagine if we had access to that? How much less expensive the cost of our gasoline might be? Well, it boggles my mind that Biden and his henchmen in his administration are shutting things like that down.
Here's the hypocritical, of course, analogy between the two. That shutting down, you got to remember when the pipeline was shut down, that's when gas prices started to go up. And some that do their program at 10 o'clock would say, well, that thing never really was completed anyway, so why would it matter, you know?
Yeah, they keep talking about it. Oh, it's going to be in the future. But we're not losing anything because it never got started.
But when they say that putting a chip factory, not potato chips, Lay's or anything like that, but the electronic chips, over here, it takes 5 years to build it. But it's going to lower it right now. No, it's not. It's going to take 5 years. If you're saying that shutting down the pipeline doesn't mean anything, this thing isn't built, how can it affect the it's going to take 5 years to build this thing.
And think about this. If we had allowed the pipeline, if it had never been slowed down at any point, because you remember, this goes back to the Obama administration.
Sure.
If they never had slowed that pipeline down, it would have been up and running by now. And we would have had all of this crude coming down there.
Exactly.
We wouldn't be going out hat in hand to Saudi Arabia and Venezuela, people that don't necessarily like us.
But the thing is that thing is sitting there doing nothing right now. You'd think a real business mind person would say, well, listen, we're more than halfway there. How don't we just finish the damn thing,
know,
you know?
Of course.
Even all you tree huggers, even if we don't use it.
And here's the thing. Pipelines are the safest way of transporting crude or oil or whatever you want to call it. If it's done by rail or it's done by a truck, you have a much greater chance of an accident.
How many rail accidents have we just
exactly.
had? And we've learned that the rail system isn't very safe.
That's right. You're exactly right. You might, before we go to break, Rachel Maddow, I don't see her much anymore.
Yeah, you keep saying it's Richard Maddow.
Richard Maddow dismissed the Durham report. Why are we not surprised? All that time, she was dissing that whole situation about looking into Russia collusion.
Yeah, you know, it's people like
she was dissing the Republicans and Trump. All of that. Now she won't accept the report.
No, but those are the type of people that can sit there and have a one-hour show or whatever it is. I don't know. I don't watch it.
I don't either.
And sit there and go unopposed and say whatever they want and just think that that's law. Oh, it's nothing. Don't worry about it, people. Yet don't have anybody in your studio that might give you an objective second look at that. Or maybe it isn't what it, because you're a Trump hater to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Exactly. Hey, listen to this. You know, she does a show one day a week. You know how much they're paying her for a one day a week?
No,
show?
I don't.
$30 million.
Well, listen, bless her. If you can get it,
yeah,
you can get
it. Yeah, I mean, that's even more than I make.
I'm not faulting.
That's even more than I make.
I'm not faulting for her.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
Some
make as much as you can make in the free market.
Is that on the Communist News Network or is it the...
MSNBC. Or as some people call it, MSDNC.
Yeah.
All right, let's take our final break. When we come back, among other things, we are going to give you the top 10 funniest movies of all time, according to Rolling Stone.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. I love that beat. Ed, you're very talented. You get on the bongos, you get on the drums, you get on the saxophone, you get on the piano. Get off the piano, just stay on the drum. We are here, by the way, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Great Tan Talk Radio Network, Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. So happy that you're with us. We've been here a long time. But if you can't listen live, thanks to Big Ed, bless his big heart, all of our shows are put on podcast. All you got to do is go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Look at the top, right up at the top. Podcast, click on it. Ed's got all our shows on there from the most recent show at the top all the way down, and you'll know who the guest is and what the topic is with the guest and our top 10, everything you want to know. And you can listen to it at your leisure. OurFreedomWorks.com. All right, Ed, you were never a Bud Light drinker. However, Bud Light continues to see a decline in their sales. First week in May, I guess that's the last... period right now that they have statistics for showed a 23.6% drop in sales.
Uh-huh.
So things are tough. You would think that they'd get over that little thing, but I guess people haven't forgotten it. That guy, whatever his name is, Mulvaney or something, he really must have made an impact.
Well,
actually the story itself that made the impact.
Did you see what the CEOs countered with now? Did they put that in there?
Well, I know that they were setting all the horses out across.
No.
Okay.
The latest one is, if you buy $20 worth of Bud Light, they will send you a coupon for $20 off.
Really?
Yes.
That's getting it for free.
Exactly.
My goodness.
Are things that tough? We had a... Being in the bar business, the nightclub business, we could always watch a club go down. It was always the same MO. If they got to a point where they were desperate, they had one of those $10, all you can drink anything you want. This is the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Budweiser is in big, big trouble.
Wow.
And I hope some of these CEOs, like Disney, take notice that people are starting to say, okay, look, you're going to cater to that small amount of people that want you to change to follow their lead? We're going to make our voices heard now. And that's what the people that drink Bud Light, they're doing all kinds of things like destroying Bud Light. And just, they're doing the best thing they can do is not buy it.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, it's working. Did you see, was it Adidas that had a picture of a man dressed in a woman's bathing suit? Did you see that?
No, I did not.
Oh, don't see it.
No.
First of all, it's humorous. But what are these companies doing? What do they think they're doing with this? Want to ruin your brand? Keep getting political with it.
Is it really a governor of maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 people in a room that say, you know what, that's a hell of an idea, let's do that, or is it one guy that says, I think we should take this company in a different direction here because we're not catering to that small amount of people that are complaining?
It's their woke diversity department that all of these big companies have decided to put into their system, who come into the boardroom and they go, look, you know, we got to do something here. Or, you know, this is where everybody is going. We're all going woke.
And
so let's get the transgender. Let's get the guy in a woman's bathing suit. You know, let's do all of that kind of thing. Because we don't want to lose that group. Well, I'll tell you what. Lose the group because there ain't that many of them.
And for those that come on radio shows once a week and then say, well, they're changing the way people are trying to come out and do things. No, you're the people that change it because it used to be that you wanted people to just get along. Now they want you to go along.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. People have not tried to stop people from living their lives. Being a libertarian, you be anything you want. You be a pink elephant.
We want things changed.
If you like.
We want these special
privileges. But don't tell me I gotta ride you, you know?
We want special privileges or we're going to boycott you or we're going to send an email.
Right.
If you don't get our way.
Right, you are. All right, Ed. Before we get into our top 10, we have a good one. What's going on in the world of sports? How are our beloved Tampa Bay Rays doing?
The road trip is not being very kind. They're 4 out of their last 10.
Oh, boy. That's not normal for them.
And our manager, Kevin Cash, is up to his old tricks again with his shuffling pitchers around and not putting, saving the arm. Here's the thing, Paul. He's the worst manager at babying pitchers so they don't get hurt. But guess what? Almost every year, he has the most amount of pitchers on IR.
Really? We don't want that. I mean, they've been doing so doggone good, and he has to get credit for some of that.
Yes.
And but I'll always remember that World Series situation where he pulled a guy. Or he didn't pull. I can't remember now.
Yes, no, he pulled him.
He pulled him. And Blake we went Snell. Downhill and we lost it.
Blake Snell.
That's right. I know you know those things. All right. Time for the top 10. And this is a good one, Ed. The top 10 funniest movies of all time. Now, I'm going to tell you that I think this Rolling Stone poll is a few years old.
Okay,
so you're not going to see any real recent movies.
So
okay?
You're saying they're mostly black and white.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Now
In fact, all of these movies, you would have been, you were an adult, okay?
Now, I'm scared if you're going to notice any of the no talkies, the silent films.
I said that you were an adult while these movies were being first run, all right? So here we go.
All right.
And I want to see how many you've seen. Number 10, The Naked Gun.
Oh, great movie, yeah.
Of course it was.
That was a whole trilogy of those.
Exactly right. The Naked Gun. You know that it came out of that TV show Police Squad that Leslie Nielsen was
in. O.J. Simpson was in that before he murdered people.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Naked Gun is number 10. Okay, number 9. Dumb and Dumber.
Yes, Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you saw that?
Sequel was pretty good, too.
Was it?
Dumb and Dumber 2. Took a long time to figure that out.
God almighty. Okay. Number 8. I remember this movie. It was hilarious. The Life of Brian. Did you ever see
it?
You've got to see it, Ed. It's got a scene where they're all being crucified. They're all lined up. There are about 13 crosses.
Okay.
And one of them starts whistling something to the effect of, let's look on the bright side of things. And they all start singing it.
Okay?
And you just have to see it.
Kind of like a Mel Brooks movie?
It's like a Mel Brooks movie. All right. But it was a Monty Python movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Number 7. This is Spinal Tap.
No, you got to see that one, too.
Rob Reiner directed it. Groundbreaking mockumentary about a British band going through a very rough period of time. It was hilarious. All right. Number 6. I know you saw this one. Caddyshack.
Oh, of course. It's a classic.
It is a classic. You know Harold Ramis? Yeah, who's been in some of the movies.
Yeah.
Okay. He created that.
Yeah. A lot of drugs on that movie.
On the set?
No, a lot of drugs.
I believe it.
Drugs and a lot of drinking.
Yeah. Well, Rodney Dangerfield was in it. And
it was the other cast members that were out of control.
And all the
Bill Murray was
in it. Right. Number 5, Young Frankenstein. You ever see that one?
Yeah.
Gene Wilder?
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Really good. A Mel Brooks movie. Number 4, speaking of Saturday Night Live, Animal House.
Yeah, that's a classic.
John Belushi, yeah. Number 3, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I haven't seen that.
That was really a stupidly funny movie, okay? They're searching for the Holy Grail. They're riding fake horses. It's like little kids. You know the little kid's toy with a horse head on a stick?
Mm-hmm.
That's how they're riding in search of the Holy Grail. Number 2, Airplane.
Well, yeah, Leslie Nielsen.
That was his introduction to comedy.
A lot of movies. I mean, a lot of sound effects came out of that movie. Oh my God, how long was that?
Well, let me ask you this, Ed. Surely you saw Airplane.
No, that's not what it said.
No. You didn't bite. You're supposed to say, "I did see Airplane," and don't call me Shirley.
Okay.
That's from the Airplane. All right, Ed. What is the number one most funniest movie according to Rolling Stone?
I have so many.
Come on now.
I don't know.
There's one we haven't mentioned, and you just gotta.
Okay. How about? I can watch it anytime, and it'd be so politically incorrect today, and that's Blazing Saddles.
Roll the drum. You are correct. Blazing Saddles. Mel Brooks created this 1974 Western spoof, took all the cliches from the genre, and totally subverted them.
Here you go.
Munga like candy.
What? I didn't catch what he said, but.
Munga like candy.
Mungo like candy.
Oh, Mungo like candy.
Before he punched out the horse.
There were so many. Oh, God. All right. Well, thanks for listening. We will be back on Monday. Remember, freedom works.
And a happy Friday. Friday, Tampa Bay. Big Ed here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Let's take a look at your Bay Area forecast. Nice looking day out there today. A high of 85. Mostly sunny skies. Only a 20% chance of rain. Lower humidity. On Saturday, looking for a high of 86 and about a 20% chance of rain. Sunset this evening is at 8:17 p.m. Now, here's the latest of CBS News.
From the Sunshine State, this is Tampa Bay's Tan Talk. This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. A Washington, D.C. police officer is under arrest, charged with lying about leaking confidential information to a leader of the Proud Boys who was recently convicted of seditious conspiracy. CBS's Cammy McCormick.
This officer was arrested today for not just lying, but obstructing an investigation after the Proud Boys destroyed a Black Lives Matter banner in the nation's capital. Shane Lamond of the Metropolitan Police Department allegedly warned the group's leader that there was an arrest warrant out for him. He's been indicted by a grand jury and will make a court appearance today.
There's word pilots at American Airlines have reached a tentative deal on a new contract with the airline. FedEx pilots have voted to authorize a strike if there's no agreement on a new labor deal. No strike is imminent. Now to Japan. CBS's Elizabeth Palmer is covering the G7 summit.
The real work of the summit began over lunch as the leaders turned to a packed agenda with support for Ukraine at the top of the list. And then the news broke that President Volodymyr Zelensky would travel to Hiroshima in person. His appearance will underline Vladimir Putin's recent threats to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine.